Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So Jagannath, you please lead the chanting and read the verse, do everything, and then I'll speak. Okay, because my voice is out of order. Om Namo Bhagavate. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 18. Tasyaiva heto prayate takovido. Vilabhyate prabhata apyataha. Talabhyate anukama sukham. Kalena sarvatra gabhira rangasa. Tasyaiva heto prayate takovido. Nalabhyate brahmasya brahm upriyada. Talabhyate dukkabhadanyata sukham. Kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. There's another verse with a very similar meaning in the Bhagavatam, in the seventh canto. Can anyone think? Srimad Bhagavatam quiz. You get what's the purport of this verse, or one of the main points is that, what is that they say in America? What goes around comes around. Sukham aindriyakam daitya. Deha yogena dehinam sarvatra labhyate daivad yata dukham ayatnataha. So it has the same meaning, that there's no need to endeavor for happiness, you'll get it anyway, just like you get unhappiness without trying for it. So that point is also stated in this verse, but here it's stated rather what one, as well as stating that, it also states what one should do, which is to endeavor for a different kind of happiness altogether that one cannot get in the material world. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada describes how people are busy trying to get something or do something. Everyone is working in various ways. So as I'm speaking to devotees who are gathered here for our leaders' meeting, it's good to make the point that a leader in Krishna consciousness especially is a busy person. It's not for the bhajananandi sadhu type. In fact, sometimes the leaders are so busy they hardly have enough time for bhajan, but that shouldn't be also. There should be time for bhajan. It means chanting our rounds, engaging in all the basic activities of hearing and chanting. And deity worship may be there also, but mostly managers, they have to oversee that, the leaders in Krishna consciousness. So it's a busy life, and Srila Prabhupada wanted that. He said himself, I was never lazy. He was a busy person by any measurement, even if you take, even if you don't consider that he was topmost Paramahamsa. Just examining his life, we can see he was a very busy person. In his family life, in his retired life. As I often say to people who are around the age of retirement, because in Hindi they say retirement, nivrit hona. To aisa bolta hun to nivrit hone ke paschat aur jada pravrit hona chahiye. Bhagavan ki seva mein. So after retirement from material activities, one should be more nivrit, means just like detached from, and more engaged in, more busy in Krishna's service. And Srila Prabhupada certainly showed that example. So everyone's busy, unless one's completely in the mode of ignorance. Even in the mode of ignorance, you see, around here, I've seen around here, there are so many dung beetles. I have no idea what they're called in Hindi, but you see, they're very... What are they called? Any idea? You don't get them in Delhi. You must get them up in Punjab in the field. All the insects are killed by pesticides, along with the human beings are getting killed. Cancer Punjab. They're getting the reactions for killing so many pests. There's no word in Sanskrit for pest. I mean, you can say krimi, but it's the word pest. The implication, pest, some nasty thing that you have to kill it. There's no such concept. What do they call? Krimi nashak, pesticide. But it means insect killer, more or less. Anyway, getting off the point. But they're very busy. You can see them very busily rolling their ball of dung. And if by accident you happen to kick and their ball goes away, what a distress for the poor dung beetle. Of course, that life is in the mode of ignorance, but humans in the mode of ignorance, the prime characteristic is alasya. Dirgha Sutri, laziness. Dirgha Sutri means, what's the word in English? Putting things off? Procrastination. They're just too lazy. Srila Prabhupada told the story once of there's a competition to see who's a lazy person. So two men are lying down. They're all lying down in the laziness competition. And this house was set on fire. And the men didn't even want to move when the house is on fire. They just said, turn on the other side. It won't burn that side. It'll only burn on one side. So that's laziness to the point of insanity. It's also, if you find someone lazy, you can light their dhoti or something like that just to get them enlightenment. It's not recommended, but it's a possible psychological method. You must know, Keshavananda, you're the all-knowing in the as in the medical field. I often thought sometimes you see people, not in India so much, but you always see people, they're completely morose all the time. I wonder if there's some kind of psychological trick. You tie them one elbow to someone else and another, and then you run with two men on it. Then you must make them run, and that would get them out of their mode of ignorance. Possible experiment. Of course, if they have a heart attack, then you'll get sued for that. Anyway, the point is that everyone's busy. And we were all busy prior to coming to Krishna consciousness. Especially those who are living a normal life in India today, in the cities, means insanely busy. There should be different activities. Yuktahara, viharascha. The vihara comes before yukta cheshtasya karmasu. First eating, then relaxation, then endeavor and work. So all these things, they should all be balanced, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. But in modern life, the only vihara or relaxation is you come home late at night and watch TV and have sex with your wife, and that's it. There's no time for relaxation, which is required. But modern India, there's very, very busy life, nasty, life. People are not at all satisfied. So previously we were busy, and sometimes people think that becoming a sadhu means escaping from the world, just living a lazy life. But the Krishna conscious movement is not meant for that. It's meant for working hard for Krishna. Work now, samadhi later, Srila Prabhupada said. And factually, if we work hard for Krishna, then we can achieve samadhi now. Not this sitting down, gazing at the tip of one's nose kind of samadhi, but samadhi in full consciousness of Krishna. And that was Srila Prabhupada's idea of a successful temple or a successful project. And the pilots are busy flying their planes. Indian Air Force, Jamnagar. How many Air Force airfields are there throughout India? Do you know? 8 to 10. Yeah, Indian Air Force. 8 to 10 only, huh? I saw a Porbandar, there was a Navy airstrip. That's very minor. Did you see that? That's not Army either, that's Navy. Army and Navy hate each other, do they? In most countries they do. You would know Krishnakirti, maybe, being from a military background. They envy each other like anything. So, anyway, I'm talking a lot of nonsense these days, but anyway, I'm supposed to be talking about busy, being busy in Krishna's service. That was Srila Prabhupada's idea of a well-managed temple. It means lots of books are being distributed, lots of activity. Srila Prabhupada said temple means activity. There should always be some activity, though, so that when people come, they're attracted. If you just go to a temple and the only activity going on is the bats passing stool, as we see in some temples, it's not very attractive. Not in ISKCON temples, so far. But if there are activity, always kirtan, someone is there to greet you, and there's a spirit of preaching spirit. So, a temple that is thriving, it's, of course, that's a sign of good leadership, that everyone's well engaged in Krishna's service, is happily engaged. Whenever we see that some preaching program is thriving, of course, it's not just a one-man shop, but one or several devotees are able to inspire others to engage in the mission of Srila Prabhupada, preaching service. Activity is usually connected with the mode of passion, but sustained activity is activity in the mode of goodness. So it may be that someone is able to inspire devotees for some time, but to go on sustaining them year after year after year on this spiritual platform, that is very good leadership. And someone who can remain in the position of a town president for year after year after year, not just sitting on the post, but expanding the preaching, keeping the book distribution going. It just comes in my mind, Shvavas Prabhu in Los Angeles, he's been the town president there since, I think maybe late 1970s or early 1980s, and book distribution. He's kept Los Angeles at that. Of course, again, it's not just him, but it's the devotees who go out to distribute books. But he's made the atmosphere. He's made it a priority that book distribution. Los Angeles has always been a leading temple in book distribution, year after year after year. So that's good leadership. And I'm sure people have got complaints about him, because it's not possible to be a leader and not have someone who's discontent, especially in this Kali Yuga, where discontent is just in the atmosphere. Even if people have got nothing to be discontent about, they can imagine something to become discontent about. So, if we see that temple activities are going on, activities for glorifying Krishna, for spreading the Sankirtan movement, then we can know that there's good leadership. And if it's not, if everything's dull, or even if things are going on, but it's going on in a formal manner, that means it's leadership is lacking. It is possible to keep a temple running on very efficiently year after year by paying people to do the job. But that won't... You can pay pujaris and everyone else, every position, including the town president, can award himself a fat salary also. But that won't have the life of Krishna consciousness. It looks like it's going on. All things are going on well, but it won't have the same spirit or life that comes from devotees dedicating themselves selflessly. And then Krishna reciprocates with that, so the devotees become spiritually enlivened. And it is easier to pay people or devotees, if you want to call them, to do the job. But it won't be on the spiritual platform, because then they're working for money. That's all. They can say and do and everything just as it seems right, but it's not right, because they're not the prime motivation is not the pleasure of Krishna. And then you don't have to motivate others to surrender to Krishna if you're paying them, because anyway, it becomes like in any other job. You do the job or you don't get the money. That's all. So there's no need to try to inspire others or set a good example oneself. But that won't please Krishna. So as I was saying, that there will be complaints. And as you all know, a large part of leadership or management in Krishna consciousness is dealing with various problems which arise. Kalena sarvatra gabhira rangasa. It applies. It's not just some statement from some ancient book which has got no relationship. It's right here and now in our lives. So by the influence of time, it's so subtle we can't imagine what's going on. And it's like that. You might be peacefully chanting your rounds and all of a sudden you say, well, the temple's on fire, or someone's kid fell down and broke their bones, and just all kinds of things. Just expect the unexpected. That should be a motto, especially for those who are trying to lead. And there may be so many books, management books, How to Lead, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and so on and so on and so on. But nothing can, no course or personality development or leadership skills, none of these theoretical courses can prepare anyone for the, can fully, let's say, let's be a little kind here, because we're supposed to be nice. So you can't fully prepare anyone for actually leading, because life is so complex. Gambhira ranghasa, gapira subtle, ranghasa progress. The life is so complex, and there are all kinds of situations which you just can't imagine, like I say. And then you have to deal with it. When things are going fairly well, then people may complain that this isn't right and that isn't right. But when there's a big problem, they all dump it on you, right? It's your problem. That's what managers and leaders, they have to accept that. That's the what is that called? The burden. What's that called? The something burden. You have to accept that burden of responsibility, and we can't expect that everyone's going to be very reasonable, very intelligent, very pure-hearted. We should be grateful if anyone is. And if we try to keep our standards high, then we will get good devotees who are serious, but they may not be very intelligent in the sense of dealing in worldly matters, or they may not be very mentally stable. That's one common condition in Kali Yuga, upadruta, upadrav. The mind is always disturbed. And we ourselves, we're also products of Kali Yuga. We're struggling with our own anarthas, and we're supposed to be perfect, but we're not. So what can we do? Ask Draupadi. Throw both hands in the air and call out, Govinda! And at the same time, keep a cool head, because if you look like you're always in anxiety, then everyone else will get in anxiety also. So what to do? You just have to go on with faith in Krishna. Management means to be exposed to all kinds of problems and conflicts, and it's the nature of Kali Yuga that if people don't have anything to, they don't have anything actually to fight over, they'll invent something to fight over. I think all these sports were arranged for that reason, so they can, puts in a formal format the rivalry between different countries. I was in Croatia once, and I went to the Serbian embassy to get a visa. And they said, oh, someone else coming to get it, because there were so many Croatians coming, because there was a football match between Serbia and Croatia. And that's something like a cricket match between India and Pakistan. It's just the same kind of rivalry they have going on. But instead of literally killing each other, which is going on between India and Pakistan every day, and went on between Serbia and Croatia, how long ago? 25 years ago, something like that. Then they have a football match, and they can just hate each other on a football game. It doesn't really cause much harm. So that envy is there, and there's always some conflict. Someone thinks, you should do it this way, and I should do it that way, and he didn't treat me properly, and this and that, and on and on and on. So again, one way to avoid that is just pay everyone and then tell them to shut up. But it won't foster devotion. It won't purify anyone. We're talking about spiritual leadership here, in which the endeavor is not just to get the job done, but to lift everyone up so that they can come above all these petty disagreements. If we have a major mission that we're doing together, just like in a war, just talking about the war between Serbia and Croatia, then people, that's Machiavellian politics, and since time immemorial. If there's conflict within the state, then choose a war, make a war with the neighboring state. And then everyone, because they're fighting with each other, then instead they turn their enmity toward, they unite together to fight the outside enemy. So in the same way, if we have a mission, we have to distribute so many books. 62 Bhagavatam sets were distributed in Surat in 15 days, just before the Rath Yatra. That's pretty good, isn't it? But there is one major drawback, that there are at least 6 lakh people in Surat who didn't get a Bhagavatam set. Right? Hey, many more, actually. But what's the population of Surat? 60, 70 lakhs. Okay, so there are two ways of looking at it. It's good. What are you doing in Jamnagar? How many sets are you distributing? They're mostly Gujarati sets, were they? Hindi also, many Hindi also. Yeah. I think the Hindi people have more taste for reading because that culture was inculcated by Gita Press. So they have an idea of having spiritual books in the home. So anyway, the point that instead of saying, we just read 62 books, 62 sets. Okay, good. So let's have some prasadam and relax. Have some prasadam and don't relax. What about the other 6 lakhs? Okay, everyone. Now you relax for 10 minutes. Now, okay, time to do more. So pushing. Srila Prabhupada said this is a pushing movement. He said, just like my spiritual master pushed me. And actually he did. He came again and again in the dream, said, you have to take sannyas. And then he felt he's pushing me, and he said, I'm pushing you. You have to push others. This is parampara. So this pushing, of course, pushing can also make people feel uncomfortable, maybe push them over if you push them too hard. So it's a great art how to push people without pushing them out of Krishna consciousness. It's a great art. But if there's no pushing, then they'll just vegetate and rot and not become inspired. So, like I say, one way to get rid of conflicts is just pay everyone. But actually that won't solve everything. That means you can just tell them to shut up. But among themselves, they'll be fighting and this and that. One way is just to ignore the problem. That's I learned that from the highest echelons of our movement. If you don't like something or someone, you just ignore them. But it doesn't solve the problem. It's ostrich with the head in the sand policy. There must be some similar thing in Sanskrit, but if there is, I don't know it. Just pretend the problem isn't there. But the real thing is to bring people to a higher level. Just like Arjuna, he wanted to avoid the conflict. Let's all be nice. You face it, come up to a higher level of consciousness and do the needful. That's another of Srila Prabhupada's common sayings. 3 words, do the needful. There's a lot of meaning in that. Huh? Do the needful. Do the needful for what? For what's needed to be done? It's needed to be done to make the whole world Krishna consciousness. So in 3 words, do the needful. You have lifetimes and lifetimes of work and endeavor and planning and so many things. Srila Prabhupada once said to Hari Keshwami that to be a GBC, it's like being an iron rod put in the fire. And at the end it becomes steel. The iron goes in the fire, something's added to it, beaten, and then it becomes steel, becomes very strong and solid. So that's also helps to build us. If we just ignore or try to overlook various problems. Of course, sometimes a good policy is to, it may be in some circumstances, the best policy is just to not get involved at all. That we have to see. It's difficult to say because you can never know what's going to happen in future. You can never tell. It's very easy in hindsight to say, oh, you should have done this or you should have done that. But a leader has to make decisions, and there's always a risk because things can go wrong. And many times they will go wrong. But then someone who never took a risk is one who never succeeded in doing anything worthwhile or substantial. And that's true in material existence. There must be some
You buy these diaries and they have all these sayings, so there must be one saying like that, that one who didn't take a risk never achieved anything. Something, it must be. It's probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of Covey's seven habits. I don't know. I don't know what his habits are. So
one has to be at the same time very careful, because we're trying to inspire devotees in Krishna consciousness. That means we may not say it directly, we may not even think of it like that, but we're expecting them to have faith in us and our decisions. So it's a very heavy position to be in, especially because there are going to be mistakes. And it is good to, if one makes a mistake, just to humbly admit it and then go on with life. Of course, if someone is all the time making mistakes, he probably shouldn't be in a management position. It's expected that someone has some worldly wisdom, how to live in this world and promote the Krishna consciousness movement within it without messing things up too much. Mistakes can be made. Mistakes can be avoided also by a little. Some kinds of mistakes can be avoided by some wisdom, or some things you can learn in management seminars. Of course, they can teach you and you can write down the answer and get it right, but actually applying it is something else, because we often find that people, they go to a management seminar and they get full marks, but then practically they don't apply it. When it comes to practical life, some forgetfulness or egoism or something comes in the way. But there are different kinds of mistakes can have different kinds of repercussions. Loss of money. But worse than that is loss of faith, because if you lose the faith of the... If money is lost, then anyway, what can you do? Go on with whatever's left, if there's anything left. But loss of faith means that no one will want to, or individuals won't want to work with you. So, like I say, we can learn some things, and we do hopefully learn by experience. For instance, if someone comes to you and complains, this person said this, 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 and this, and then you go and punish that person, but first you just hear the other side of the story. It's always wise to hear the other side of the story. So that's just practical wisdom, which everyone can incorporate, because often you'll find that someone accused, he didn't say that, or it was just twisted a little bit, or the person took it out of context, like that. So we can... By acting on unverified information, especially when it comes to chastising someone, then that will cause loss of faith. It often may be that someone, they do something wrong, but they don't perceive it as wrong, because that's egoism. Everyone thinks I'm always right. And then to try to explain to them actually why it's wrong, this and that. And some people, they'll never admit that they're wrong, and then they're hopeless people. It's hopeless to try to work with such people. That's another thing one can gradually learn. If someone can never admit that they've made a mistake, then they're hopeless to work with. Better keep away from such people. They're not fit to be devotees even. Very dangerous people to be around. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of, and it's common wisdom, you can say, although wisdom isn't that common, but it's that a china vase or glass bottle, once it's broken, you can never put it together again. You can maybe try to put it together with some glue, but it'll never have the same strength and it'll never look as nice. If at all, you can put it together. So somehow, if you lose someone's faith, they have faith and you lose that, then the whole basis on which you're trying to do your service of leading others in Krishna consciousness will be lost. So on the one hand, one has to make decisions. Not everyone will like the decision all the time. But you can't stop acting because not everyone will like it. And basically, Krishna consciousness self is a very simple process. Hearing and chanting about Krishna and serving Krishna in various ways. The material world itself is quite complex. So that's why it's good to consult others, not be overconfident of one's own ability and intelligence. There is a danger in being a spiritual leader, especially here in India, where many people have a strong tendency to want to glorify spiritual leaders and want to submit themselves to spiritual leaders. And a person who's in that post can, by the influence of ego, think that, well, now everyone's glorifying me, I'm great, whatever I do is divine, and I don't have to consult anyone, and everything I do is perfect. As soon as one thinks like that, then one becomes a big fool, but that won't be apparent to himself or his followers, because there's so much invested their emotions in and intelligence in thinking that this person is so great and everything he does is divine, can be very, very dangerous. You read that, what's that called? Killing for Krishna? What's that book called? Which Kirtanananda, in his new Vrindavan, thought he was invincible because he was always surrounded by people who thought he was as good as God. And he was as good as God as long as he was just doing the work of God. But then when his, if he ever was at any point only doing that. But he was out of touch with reality, that there's a big world out there with law enforcement agencies, and you just can't break the law of the land on and on and on and think that you're not going to get arrested. So it became a major disaster. The bigger they are, the harder they fall, as the saying goes. So it's really kshurasya dara nishita durataya durgang patas tatkarayo vadanti. We're warned in the Upanishads that this path is like a razor's edge. It's a difficult path. Say the kavaya, the wise people, they warn us. So it's very good to, essential, that we do with all the other devotees the same things, hearing and chanting together regularly, hearing about the nature of this world from Bhagavatam, just as we read this verse just now in which Srila Prabhupada talks about one who is actually intelligent and philosophically inclined. So that gives us a clue that we should be philosophically inclined and not that our intelligence is caught up within this material world, and understand that, as this verse says, that we're meant for going beyond this material world. So regularly reading this with Srila Prabhupada's purports, it locks us into reality. Reality means the spiritual world. And here in the material world, we're here, we have some service to do. We're all very tiny living beings. However big someone may praise us, Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajagacha, you may be praised in course of time. It's quite likely. I hope you all will be praised like that. You should become recognized as
spiritual leaders. You all already, that's going on in a small way. But why is small? Why not the whole? When you come to Jamnaga, the head of the city should be there to welcome you with garlands and bow down to you. That should be there. But at the same time, one has to be very, very careful. And one sign of intelligence, even material intelligence, is to recognize the limits of one's own intelligence and understand that, well, I might have learned a few shlokas from Bhagavad Gita, but now I have to build a temple. I don't know anything about building temples, so I should consult someone who does. That makes sense, doesn't it? Oh, now I have to set up a community. I should consult someone who knows something. It means you can contact an architect or in some community, then one should keep in contact with those devotees who have already gone through the stages that we've been through. That's one reason we organize these meetings, so that devotees can share their experiences, which means their mistakes also, so we can avoid the mistakes of others. So in this way, we can do things better for Krishna's service. We should always remember we're trying to serve Krishna. That's all. Simple thing. Just we have a different role. As Srila Prabhupada often said, the person who's worshipping the deity, people think, oh, the one who's offering the arati to the deities must be a very Mota Maharaj, isn't it? In Gujarati, they'll say, Big Maharaj. And someone who's cleaning the floor, there's some ordinary person. But Srila Prabhupada said, in Krishna's vision, it's all the same. He doesn't need our service anyway. He doesn't need temples built for him. He's already got the whole spiritual world. So Krishna may be more satisfied with someone who's cleaning the floor than one who's worshipping the deity. All depends. Bhava grahi janadana. That works both ways. That means that if our bhava is shuddha, if our feelings for Krishna are actually pure, then Krishna will be very happy to accept that. But also if our feelings are not very pure, then Krishna, he won't be very happy to accept that. So if our own intentions are pure to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada, the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then that will be imparted to others. And if sincere souls will be attracted to serve Krishna. And if we're going on some other motive, then we'll attract people of motivated consciousness, materially motivated. So first of all, we have to see what is our own motive. Otherwise, what's the point? What's the point of building big temples, having big communities, if at the end of it, well, any chanting Hare Krishna is good, but if it's all materially motivated, then what's the point? Of course, these communities and temples with no electricity, it's very good, because that tends to filter out persons of mundane consciousness, because people have, with material motivations, they don't want to live in such what they consider to be austere conditions. But there may be some also who somehow, we can't quantify or measure the influence of Maya. It may come in all kinds of ways that we can hardly imagine. And if we think now we got Maya all worked out, we know everything that's going on, then we can know for sure that we're in Maya, and she's got some other trick that's going to come in some way or other that we just simply cannot imagine. It's just like in warfare, or hot and cold wars, and they're always trying to think of some way in which some kind of weakness they can find and exploit that. And now there's become one major area of military endeavor, apart from armies, and then there's propaganda that was discovered. Propaganda dehearten. I can't remember the word exactly. Make despondent the soldiers on the other side and the people on the other side. And now they came out, now the whole thing, cyber warfare, a major part. And always trying to find if there's any weakness and exploit that. It's always some, and then in cyber warfare, of course, it's a very, very complex and like this. So Maya is like that. She has all kinds of ways to enter. And again, we can't expect that all devotees are going to be very totally pure-hearted. And that's a major reason for the Varnashram projects. At the present time, we're doing the Varnashram projects for devotees who are very serious, that they want to dedicate their life to Krishna. And they're moving to the farm to get that atmosphere. But actually, the Varnashram project is meant for engaging all kinds of people who may not be very Krishna conscious. Do some work, chant Hare Krishna, come to the kirtan. This kirtan mela, I often think it's like that. It's for those who are, it is a facility for those who are not, I'm not saying everyone who goes there, but many who are not very serious to chant Hare Krishna on a daily basis and do daily sadhana, they can go to the kirtan mela and have a few days of bliss chanting Hare Krishna. And then they go back to their TVs and their dogs and their cats and their budgerigars and who knows what else they're doing on. And once or twice a year they go to a kirtan mela. So it's good for them. But that's not going to lift you all the way back to Godhead. For that one needs regulated sadhana. But not everyone's going to be on that platform. So come do some work and join the kirtans in the evenings. That's one facility of the Varnashram, is supposed to engage people like that. All kinds of people. In this regard, I want to mention something now. Because for the meeting, but I'll bring it up now as it's come up in the course of talking. So we want to establish Varnashram. Not everyone's not going to be fully Krishna conscious. Then do we promote demigod worship? How about that? If we're going to set up a Vedic society, I'll tell you why I'm asking this, because one disciple of mine, her daughter's at school in Gujarat. She's about 12 years old, something like that. And she wants to do Gauri Puja, worship of Gauri. When we say Gauri, we think of Shama Gauri, Nitya Kishore, Radha, but generally people think of Parvati. So the Gauri Puja is done. The young girls at that age, if they're not married yet, they do it with the idea of praying to Gauri that they can get a good husband. So we want to encourage them to have this kind of mentality, isn't it? The girls, instead of, I'll go through 10 or 12 abortions and then I'll marry someone and I'll still keep two or three of my old boyfriends, which is what's going on in some places. Just, I was recently in Bangalore. I was talking with some devotees and their sons, 22, 23 years old, and they want to get him married because in that community they still marry. I just said, don't marry him to a Bangalore girl. They said, yeah, well, you know. Find some girl from a small town or something. Not a Bangalore girl. Because they're already completely... They said, we know. They said, we know already. They said that the first thing they'll say is they're not going to live with the parents. And they will dictate that I'll go on working, and then when I want to have a child, I'll have a child. Just horrible. Should I say that? Well, I said it already. Might get me on trouble, in trouble on the internet. But I'm not saying every Bangalore girl, but especially those who are from the good families and who have a good education. So that this getting back to this young girl, she wants to do Gauri Puja. All her friends are doing it. And even I saw in Baroda as we're going on the Rath Yatra, there was some sweet shop advertising some sweets for offering in Gauri Puja. Still a big thing. It's good, isn't it, that they should cultivate such an attitude. But on the other hand, it's worship of a demigoddess. So do we encourage that or not? The gopis worship Katyayani, same thing. Of course, that was forgetting Krishna. But these are the kind of complex questions that was going to arise. I know in Hungary that at the farm there, Shivaram Maharaj, who's definitely in the Western world, way ahead of everyone in establishing Varnashram, he has small temples of Shiva on the farm. I didn't ask him why exactly. But that's a standard thing, actually, in Vedic culture. When you have a temple, Vishnu temple, especially a major temple, you have a Shiva temple also. At the Yogapit, Bhaktivinoda Thakur installed two Shiva lingams. You know that in Mayapur? When you go, there's the main temple, and then you go around to see the little temple of Koka Nirmai. Koka Bengali means little boy. So little boy Nirmai with Sachi and Jagannath. If you go around the back, you'll find two Shiva lingams for protecting. So do we do that? I've always been very cautious about that because you know what it's like in India. As soon as you open the door to demigod worship, then there's no end. And it is part of Vedic culture. It's in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna decries it. Well, in the beginning, he says it's good. That's a beginning, karma kanda. But then he goes on to say, actually, it's not so good after all. Better you worship me. So these are the kind of questions, very complex questions. Maybe it's not very complex to someone who's got clear vision, but then we may discuss this. If people are quite materialistic, they want to eat meat. Well, Srila Prabhupada, he also said that they can eat meat. We're not going to stop meat eating. Prabhupada will always be there. Even in New Vrindavan, he said, you make an arrangement with the local butchers. We'll give you the dead cows. You can sell the meat. He said that. And he said, Prabhupada, they won't allow it because you're only allowed to sell meat if you kill the cow. Prabhupada said, well, that's the whole thing that we want to stop. We'll arrange for you to eat beef. Just don't kill the cow. When the cow dies naturally, we'll give you. And Prabhupada often said, you all know because you all read Prabhupada's books, he often said that you can kill and eat some unimportant animal, like buffaloes and sheep, goats, dogs, but don't kill cows. If you want to eat meat, you can. Within the Vedic prescription. So, presumably, as Srila Prabhupada in this first canto, he talks about the Vedic king, like Parikshit. So definitely in Parikshit's kingdom, there must have been animal killing going on. But according to Vedic injunctions, must have been allowed. At least the Chandals will do. They're not allowed within the village, but they're allowed to do whatever they like outside the village. They're not allowed to kill cows, but they are allowed to kill all kinds. And there are temples. For the low caste people, they have their temples and they sacrifice. Even the high class people, it used to be until recently, the animal slaughter was going on in a big way in Nepal, Pashupatinath. That was going on under the direction of the king of Nepal. Then at Mysuru, the
was that Chamundeshwari temple. They used to sacrifice so many animals. Now they stopped it. But it was better in the old days when it was allowed and slaughterhouses weren't allowed. Now the Vedic ritualistic animal slaughter is stopped and the slaughterhouses are going on. So it's better that they had the Vedic system. So these are things we have to consider. It's that you're going to have Vedic society. They're going, under rules and regulations, drinking of alcohol may be allowed. Meat eating, some concession for illicit sex, gambling. It's there in Haribhakti Vilas, you know that? You should gamble on Diwali day. It's right there in Haribhakti Vilas. It's very common here in Gujarat, no? Gambling on the day after Diwali. Here it's Janmashtami. In Haribhakti Vilas it says, day after Diwali. That doesn't mean we should do it. But someone may do it. They're allowed for one day. And then someone, presumably someone has to hold their hand so they just don't gamble everything away, which people may do. So anyway, these are just some points. I suppose we don't have to consider them right now if we're going to set up a Chamundeshwari temple and have animal sacrifices. But there are the things we can consider for future also. Just one more thing about myself, as I've been saying for years, that I have to write my books. So I'm actually getting serious about this now. I just sat down for 82 days in Karamandurai, that farm there, for writing. So I may not, I'm saying this as I'm just started a traveling program which going on, you keep on saying that, right, Valsad. But before that I was in Kerala, Bangalore, Bombay, and then Valsad, Surat, Bharuch, Nandagram, Vallabhidyanagar, Baroda, Porbandar, and now here, and going on. But you can develop all these projects and everything you're doing. I should write books. I have important books to write, and especially for this these farm projects, this big book, which is going to be bigger than Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, on Vaishnav culture, etiquette, and behavior. All the little details I have to put in that, so I have to finish that. And the Mood and Mission book is still going on. If I wasn't going to the West, I could possibly have got it finished this year. But anyway, I'm going to the West. I have to get a visa and see the devotees there. So, yeah, if you don't see me so much, you can see me in the book. You can see me on Facebook. That's another important thing. Internet preaching, very big scope. I asked Hrishikesh, and you, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you're going to say something. Very big scope. You can preach everywhere, literally, all over, as long as people understand the language. So most of the Facebook, there's a lot of preaching going on already in English and Hindi. I'm talking about Hinduism in general here. There are a lot of swamis and gurus and yogis and sadhus. But in the local languages, I don't think there's much going on. So there's very, very big scope in Gujarati, Kannada, Telugu, Tamil, and these languages. So that's something to be discussed in the meeting. Simple thing you can do. You have class here every morning in Hindi because you have non-Gujaratis. Why don't you start giving it in Gujarati? Then your Nepalis and Assamese, they can also, they're going to be here, then they can learn Gujarati. And you put it, you record, do it live, record it on the internet, put it out there on the internet. I asked you to do that in Salem, to have your class live on the internet, and within 1 month you had how many? 800 people watching daily?
Now it's more than 1,000. Surprising, because there are so many classes going on the internet at the same time. Vrindavan, Mayapur, like that. But maybe the style of class that we have is somewhat different. It's often somewhat different because we just want to give straightforward in the line of Srila Prabhupada without too much masala, as they say, or spices. In this regard, I'll say one more thing, that something came to my mind recently that Jashomati Nandan Prabhu told me years ago, because he was close with Karshan Bhai Patel, the Nirma soap, Karshan Bhai. Nirma soap. 95% of people in India have heard of Nirma soap. It's a household name. He was from a farmer family, became a huge businessman based in Ahmedabad. So Jashomati Nandan was close with him. I'm not sure if he's even alive still, Karshan Bhai. He's quite old when I last saw him. So anyway, Jashomati Nandan Prabhu told me that he, Karshan Bhai, had told Jashomati Nandan Prabhu that I am not in competition with surf. The surf is expensive soap for the middle class people. This Nirma is for the ordinary people. He said, I made a new market. And you may remember in the old days, washing soap was cloth soap. You got these bars made of fish oil, which stink and didn't clean the cloth very well. But that's what the poor people used to use. And Karshan Bhai Patel, he made Nirma soap, which is a little bit more expensive and much better. And he got a whole new market himself. So this just came to my mind recently when I thought, we're not in competition. I'm talking about all of you here and those of you who preach and teach and live as I try to do, and consciously I try to closely follow Srila Prabhupada. We're not in competition with the storytellers and the joke tellers and the compromisers. We got a different product. So we can do our preaching, and don't expect that all the ISKCON's going to follow. But those who want, they will appreciate and they will come. So it's a good thing to put it out on the internet. That's why I was wondering why you have 1,000 people when in Mayapur and Vrindavan, every day they'll have some big wig, some big swami or something like this. And how are you getting so many people to listen to some young brahmachari who just learned English 2-3 years ago give a class? Because it's straightforward, simple, to the point, and that's what people want. There's some people who want that. So in English, it's going well in Salem and can be done here. In Gujarati, they must already speak some Gujarati, isn't it? These Kathiawadi Gujarati. So you can do. And then it'll be there. It'll be available for Gujaratis all over the world. In Africa, they still prefer to speak Gujarati among themselves. In England now, the modern generation, they're losing it. But it's a very big scope. Canada, I was there, I suggested that in Bangalore, and they said, well, here in Bangalore, hardly anyone speaks Canada. The majority of the population, their first tongue is not Canada. There are more Telugu people in Bangalore. So there are so many languages. But then just go a little bit outside, and definitely everywhere. It's how many? 50 million people, something like that, speaking Canada. You've got a big, big field there. So you can preach on the internet, and then so many languages, Marathi, anyway, so many. I just saw some headline, some politician spoke in the Lok Sabha or Rajya Sabha in 11 languages, because they made it a rule you can speak in any recognized Indian language in the Lok Sabha. So one of them spoke in 11 languages. All nonsense, must have been, because that's what they talk. India has how many official languages? Must be at least 15 or 16. How many?
18. Can do a general knowledge quiz, see how many you can come up with. So, but the point is that there are literally millions of people speaking all these languages. And definitely they prefer to hear in their languages. Like you're preaching in Punjab, you preach in Hindi, and everyone there preaches in Hindi, maybe in the Gurudwara in Punjabi. But definitely the people would prefer to hear in Punjabi, isn't it? At home they speak Punjabi. Definitely Bengalis. Here, Bengalis, there are a few Bengalis here. You can speak with them in Hindi. But if you speak with them in Bengali, naturally they can relate to it better. So it's good scope for preaching in the various languages. Srila Prabhupada wanted the Western devotees to learn the local languages. Yeah. So, good scope for preaching in the local languages. We're generally, our ISKCON is concentrated on English and some people doing in Hindi, but there are a lot of other languages also. English and Hindi are well catered to by ISKCON, but there are other languages also. So, via the internet, you can get all kinds. And by your internet preaching, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing in Hindi, it must be in Hindi. Yeah. So one boy came from Dubai, he was working there, now he joined in Bharuch, right? And previously, there one boy came to you from Punjab. So there's good scope. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I'll finish there. Any questions? Keep it for the meeting. Hare Krishna. If we make it to the meeting, because you never know. Kalena sarvatra gabhira ranghasa. Anything can happen at any time. But anyway, we expect to meet in the meeting. Kabhi bhi kuch bhi ho sakte, as it said in Hindi. At any time, anything can happen. So it's good to remember that also. Hare Krishna. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada.